understand. To change the topic, I got talking about arcane information and how to find stuff. I took a nap yesterday. I was exhausted because I was involved in a community service marathon in the morning. So by the time I got home, I was ready to take a nap. And it turned out the nap was more like 3 hours instead of only 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I really needed it.
Wow.
But I had the most bizarre dream. It was sort of like I was in the process of writing something like Knives Out. I don't know if you're familiar with that movie. But it was an involved, you know, murder mystery type plot. And the thing that the reason why I'm sharing this is because I was trying to work out a method to solve it with the inheritance of a family from a guy who had a massive comic book collection. So, you know, if he was an eccentric millionaire and he had 9 children, he's trying to tell them who the killer was, and he's leaving each of them a comic book from his collection. A single comic book. Now, I worked this out enough that I knew which covers I was going to use. One was going to be Thor 133. One was going to be a Martian Manhunter. One was going to be a Submariner. One was going to be Venus number 1 from back in 1941 or 42. You know, really rare and obscure copies mixed in with some current stuff or you know, modern day, including like Gold Key, Mickey Mouse Presents, just, you know, really all over the board. But I almost want to research this because I think it's a gem of an idea or a germ of an idea to write a story about something like this, except I want to actually find if these covers exist. But the theme, the connection was going to be that he has 9 grandchildren or 9 descendants, and each one has a different comic book that in some way is tied to each of the planets. There'll be one that has Venus, one that has Earth, that's mm-hmm. the Thor. The Martian Manhunter would be Mars. You know, the Pluto from the Mickey Mouse Presents.
Yeah.
Each one was going to be a planet, and that they would have to work together to figure that out and not sell the books. But once they realized, oh, everybody has an assignment, whoever got Uranus was going to be the killer or the asshole. Anyway, this was my dream, and I was, you know, I woke up and it was just kind of buzzing my head going, yeah, that's a really good idea. I should write it down before it fades from my memory, and with all the details ran out my ear, and I've told you everything I remember of it, but I was congratulating myself because it was such a clever twist. At least I thought so in my dream. So
that's a really cool. I mean, just all that's really cool. I gotta tell you, I'm kind of creeped out a little bit.
Yeah.
And the reason being is that on my Facebook feed this morning, I've seen at least 5-6 different people state that they had weird, bizarre dreams last night. And I'll tell you, I did too.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, maybe it's getting ready for the eclipse, but the collective consciousness is just going nuts right now. There is something in the air that's just got everybody heightened a little bit. It's probably just
the CIA water contamination.
I just think it's the anticipation of that.
Are you going to see it? Are you on Path of Totality?
Well, we are. We'll have about 2 minutes of it here.
Yep.
Problem is that looks like tomorrow. I'm going to take a look at the hourly at this point, because it looked like there was going to be cloudy, rainy weather tomorrow for us.
Yeah.
And let's see, what time does it start? 2 p.m. or somewhere in the
Central.
Central, yeah.
Yeah, about then.
Let me see. And this thing fills up with ads. It's so crazy. Okay. All right. Actually, well, we're partly cloudy. And then at 1 p.m. it goes to mostly cloudy, and then at 4 p.m. scattered thunderstorms. So it's a crapshoot. And the thing is, I remember when I was a kid, and we did have a total eclipse one day, and I was old enough to be walking to school alone, And I think I was still at elementary age. So we're talking early, mid-70s. And as I was walking to school, the eclipse was going on, but it was so hazy outside that you didn't have to wear any kind of protection. And you could see it through the haze.
Yes.
That was amazing. Yeah, but that,
don't kid yourself. That's not protection.
Yeah.
But you may have had the best conditions to be able to see it without giving you damage.
Yeah. Now, last summer, we had that partial eclipse.
Yes.
And I saw things I'd never seen before during an eclipse. And I guess because I just never given it the thought to do it that way. I mean, because, you know, we've all done the little light box thing.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
But I went out into my backyard. You know, I just got moved into the new house here. And we've got the pool in the backyard. It's got a nice concrete rock and concrete pathway around it. And then right at the edge is a very nice little tree. And I was standing there, and the sunlight was basically coming down through the tree onto the concrete and rock area. And with every leaf configuration, I could see the eclipse down there on the concrete. And I was just spellbound looking at that.
Yeah, it's startling. I know what you're saying.
And then what I saw in the pool, because there was a little bit of wind, and so the pool was just kind of had this little swirling action going on. And so there were these patches in the pool that were like about 6 inches around. And I couldn't necessarily see the eclipse, but I could see that something was different.
Yes, yes.
And it was just with the refraction and everything. It was just really, really cool. I really enjoyed that. Now, for all of you that are wondering what's going on, this is Coffee and Comics. My name is Brian Hughes, and over here with me is Kurt Greenfield. And we just got together to kind of shoot the breeze and talk about whatever. And of course, we're talking about the eclipse, but,
we're one day, as we record this, one day ahead of it.
Well, I'm going to try and get this out tonight. So, who knows?
To identify.
Any advice, any information, you want to pass on to the listeners on how to watch this?
It's not like you can't find this information all over the internet and all over the broadcast stations, but the bottom line is this. The sun's energy is so great that you would never think to sit and stare at it because it's too bright. It hurts your eyes, and there's a good reason for that. So you would not want to do that even during an eclipse because it's too bright and it would damage your eyes. So they give you all sorts of suggestions as far as having protective glasses or the glass from welder's goggles, which is the original solution. I've heard years, decades ago, that people talked about using exposed black film, black and white film, actually the negative, to try to use that to shield. That, I don't believe, works as well. But the whole point is, if you don't have to stare at the sun, don't. Back in the 60s and the 70s, when people were doing LSD, they'd be high on a trip, and they would just be fascinated with the sun, and they would lay back and stare at the sun and burn their eyes out, ruin their sight. So there is no reason to stare at the sun when you can make a very simple projection device. And so I'm going to describe two of them very, very simply here. Take two paper plates. Poke a very small round hole roughly in the middle of one of the plates. You can use a pencil lead or something like a pin, but make it perfectly round. It has to be a round circle that you're poking in the plate to act as a lens, as a focal device. Then you turn around with the sun to your back so that the light is coming over your shoulder, and you hold the two paper plates about a foot apart. So the light is shining through the hole in the paper plate that you just punched, and it shines down onto the second paper plate. And by moving those two plates closer and farther apart, you'll actually focus the image, the sunbeam, on the bottom paper plate, and you can see the image of the sun. It's perfect. It's simple. It's a little bright to stare at, but it will not hurt your eyes because you're only looking at a projection. And as Ryan was just talking about, the same thing happens in nature if you're standing underneath a tree where there's just the slightest breeze, and so all these little sunbeams are coming through the trees and dappling the ground. Well, on a normal day, they're round. But if it's a solar eclipse, you will see hundreds of little images of the partially eclipsed sun. And so it's the same concept. The other very simple way to deal with this, I think Brian may have mentioned it earlier, is you can get a shoebox, and an empty shoebox with the lid off. One end, poke a round hole in it, and then hold it up so that the shoebox is in line, pointed at the sun. Same sort of thing. The sun comes over your shoulder, over the shoebox, or through the hole in the shoebox, and comes across the length of the shoebox and is projected on the far end. It's the same concept, the same sort of idea, that it will give you a little projection to look at. Other than that, you can try to find a pair of eclipse glasses. Make certain that they are rated by a professional organization to be dark enough. And if memory serves, the rating is ISO 123. I'm sorry, I don't remember the rest of it, but it's all over the media if you want to find. There are some false, counterfeit glasses that are not rated that somebody tried to push out there. They won't have the symbol, they won't have the right rating, but the whole idea is it filters the sunbeam enough that your eyes will not receive the full energy of the sun, and that's the whole idea.
At our local grocery stores, they've been selling what look like 3D glasses, you know, the thin cardboard things. Now, my wife, she went and bought these Cyclops glasses. I mean, they look like the glasses Cyclops wore in the comics, except they're dark, you know, and they cover your eyes, almost like what Clayton Moore wore after they told him he couldn't wear the Lone Ranger mask anymore. I don't know if you ever saw those, because those are like huge things that went over his head, almost like Elvis glasses, but a little bit more stylistic. John Hyatt is trying to get joined on, and he seems to be having some technical issues. I hope he can get on here.
Guys, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Welcome aboard.
Super. I can hear you now, too.
Excellent. We've been talking about the eclipse here. The things to, in preparation for it and all that. What I was saying is that my wife had gotten us these, and they definitely are like welder's power glasses, because you cannot really see through them for anything. Right. But if the thing is, you know, there are people that just want to be able to look at it to see it directly. Our news media is going to plaster images of this all over the place. You're going to be able to look on the news live as it's happening. So, you know, if you really, really, really want to see it and hadn't got your glasses, you'll be able to see what they are able to show on the news pretty much anywhere and everywhere.
That's right. But plus, if you are outside and you can turn around and look through the shadows, it will put a little vision of the eclipse if you haven't already talked about that.
We did.
Or you can go the old-fashioned way and just poke a hole in a cardboard cereal box and look inside the box that way.
You're repeating us there. Already, man. Kirk and I have been talking about this, and that Kirk was just giving the great instructions on how to do all that. So yeah, it's
I hadn't heard the cereal box. That's a new one, but cereal box. That makes sense. That's good.
Or a cardboard box. I mean, don't look through the hole at the sun. You look into the box where the hole, and point the hole at the sun, and then you look at the back of the box, and then it will show you the eclipse on the back of the box.
It's where the sunbeam comes through the hole, and then like a movie theater, it projects it onto the screen in front of you.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. Ryan, you were talking about welder's glasses. About 30 years ago, there was a solar eclipse. I want to say that it was May the 11th. Maybe it was April. I don't recall. But it was about the 10th or 11th of the month. I remember this because it was just a month before my daughter was born, and she's 30 years old. And we, in this small town, you know, we weren't on the path of totality, but it was going to sweep across northern Ohio. And like a fool, I did not take the day off to go drive into the path of totality. But I did set up my telescope out on the lawn of the radio station where I was working and invited the public to come by. What I'm getting to is this. We hadn't talked well enough about preparations for it. But what I did find out by doing some research is that if you have welder's goggles, there's a glass slot in the front of the helmet, and that periodically breaks or needs replacement or whatever. If there, each piece of glass, which is about the size of a specimen slide that you put on a microscope. What do you call that? It's about that size.
No, it's a microscope slide. Yeah, that's
there we go.
Yeah.
So that's the size of it, but not the thickness of this glass. You only get these through like hardware stores or welding supply stores. The key is this. If you want to use that as a filter, if you don't have the eclipse glasses, you can use welder's goggle glass that is at least a rating of 14. Now, that means if you go to a welder supply and they say, oh, we don't have 14, do they have 2 7s? Do they have a 6 and an 8? Do they have any combination that is at least 14 provides enough protection? So that's what I did. 30 years ago, I went to the local store, I bought 2 7s, pardon me, and I taped around the outside with athletic tape just to hold them together, and I still have them in our telescope materials, you know, all these years later, and trotted out each time there's a solar eclipse or something that's partial in the area to take a look at, and it works. It's just a real small piece of glass to hold on to in front of your face. It's much more safe to use either the eclipse glasses or, as John mentioned, a simple projection system. So that's another option for you folks. But the people at the welding supply store get very, very upset with you when you get on the radio and tell everybody to go to the welder supply store to buy these things. Because they sell out so quickly. They can't figure out why people are coming through the door asking for welder's glass just in advance of an event like this, because their argument is, we serve the welding industry. If you guys all rush in here and buy out all our supplies, how are we going to service the people who are our bread and butter? So they don't like to sell these things to the general public. But once they figured out that I was on the radio telling people that that was a way to get some protective goggles before they were ever, you know, dreamt of, they were not pleased. They called the radio station and told me to stop. So
wow.
Yeah, and stacking sunglasses end on end is not going to work. Don't do that.
No. I got a pair of... In 2017, we had a event, and it was... not quite total, but nearly total here in San Diego, and I got a pair of the just the little sunglasses, eclipse glasses, and yep. I still have those. So I pull them
work.
Out. And, yeah, they do work. I was nervous at first, but it worked just fine. So
all you have to do is just you know, put them away from the sun while you store them between eclipses, so they don't get wrinkled, so that they don't crack, so that they aren't. Bleached out by the sun, you know, just put them in a safety deposit box or inside your bound volume of what would be a good one? I don't know, you know your Burn.
Yeah, the Marvel, the Burn books by Marvel Omnibus.
Yes, the Omnibus. Put them in there as a bookmark and keep them pressed, and you're fine between the eclipse. So. You know, I don't think the next one comes until what, 2044? I've been told. Anyway, they happen regularly. They are predictable. However, the odds of it occurring when the Earth has your side of the Earth turned and facing the sun, that restricts the number of eclipses in your area considerably. But you know, put them in the safety deposit box for your grandkids. Or your great-grandkids or whatever, and, you know, with a note saying these are from back in 2024, and, you know, your grandfather wanted you to keep them or have them for the next solar eclipse. It'll be a memento. They'll wonder what in the world you were thinking of. But,
Yep. I'm going to change subjects here real quick. John, before you got on, one of the things that we were talking about was dreams, because Kirk had some very bizarre, had a very bizarre dream that when you listen to it, you'll know what we're talking about. And I was noting that I've been seeing a lot of posts on Facebook, and I myself had very bizarre, vivid dreams last night, which I don't typically have on a regular basis. And they kept going, you know, even when I would get up and, you know, go do my business and come back to bed, fall asleep, I'd go into another dream state and just another vivid dream. And it just kept happening. And I'm wondering if just like all of our imaginations, all of our, you know, everything, all of our emotions are kind of hyped up getting ready for this eclipse, or if it's just the general state of things because there's so many bizarre things going on in the world at this point in time. Do you have any kind of experience last couple of days, vivid dreams or anything like that? I'm not going to ask you to tell us what they are, you know, but have you had any bizarre dreams of late?
What I found is that in the last couple of days, I've remembered my dreams more than normally I do. Normally, yes. I don't remember a lot of dreams, but the last few days, yeah, actually, I have noticed that I've been remembering them when I wake up a bit more, and it's like, oh, okay. And then, yeah, they have been kind of like head scratching, like, why would those things come together? And sometimes it's like stuff from a long time ago, and I'm like, gosh, I haven't thought about that person or that thing for so long.
I think something's going on here. You know, because
it's the aliens. They're communicating through our dreams.
Earth 616 is trying to take over us, maybe.
Could be.
Yeah, that'd be cool. no, I mean, it would look cool, but it would probably be terrifying. But no, I do think that there's something there, and I think it's, you know, just with the climate and everything that's going on and all the activity in the world, you know, the wars going on in different places, and of course the eclipse coming up, which, you know, of course that's always a sign of the alien overlords coming to somebody. So it's just...
Well, if you read the back part of the Holy Bible, and I'm not telling you that I do or that I don't, but I happen to know that there are predictions for the end times that include blood red moons, solar eclipses, earthquakes in New Jersey, and you know, I'm just amazed that we haven't seen more people predicting the end times as a result of this. Even with the Antichrist and the election coming up, I'm just amazed that people are not talking about this. I'm pleased, but I'm surprised.
No, they are talking about it. They're talking about it in their own sequestered areas, though. We don't have this in the broad media. I mean, maybe if you go on to Fox News, you might see some stuff there. If you go on to OANN and Newsmax and things like that, you're probably going to hear half of the broadcast is about how we're at the end of times. But...
Oh, really?
The standing, you know, the reputable news medias, as I would call them, the ones that are not necessarily left or right as much as others, are not talking about that in pretty much any way. Because it's, you know, always considered to be fringe discussion or extremist discussion, which those news medias are. You're going to find some very far left media also that's going to sit there and jump that. But as far as, you know, the earthquakes, of course, we had the ones outside of, Taiwan a few days ago. Oh, yeah. We had, of course, the one that was around New Jersey. And that one, I know, reached around a good bit. John Byrne had even stated on his site that even up in Connecticut, he said it felt like a freight train had just gone by his house. Shook the house, rattled the windows. And
way
so
to describe them.
Yeah, but you know, it's funny because, you know, Paul Spataro, who is closer to the epicenter in Long Island, and Scott McGregor, who is also, you know, in that area, they didn't feel it at all. They had no idea. So, you know, it's really weird. And I wonder how Jane Silent Bob's Secret Stash did, because, you know, it's right there in Red Bank, New Jersey, which is about an hour away from the epicenter. But and then, you know, New York City itself was not far from the epicenter, but we didn't really hear a whole lot from, you know, from there. But they're expecting aftershocks, not just here, but Taiwan and other places. Yeah.
So
weaker, much weaker.
Yeah, much weaker, obviously. But you know, it's
could all just be normal, natural nature. It could be too much fracking was done in here. I don't know if they do fracking up in the Northeast like they used to do down here. In the Midwest, we had a lot of it, and it caused a lot of ground settling. It caused a lot of foundations to settle and fall. It cost me thousands of dollars in my old house getting that fixed. That whole area, you could see the line that went through the neighborhoods, just where everybody was having to get their foundations redone back then. It was crazy.
Speaking of fracking and injection wells.
Mm-hmm.
I live in Southeast Ohio. That's the quadrant of Ohio where there is no major city that starts with the letter C. We're, you know, the foothills of West Virginia, so to speak. So it's very sparse. And the powers that be in the state of Ohio were approached by the fracking industry to see if they couldn't very quietly get an injection well permitted in Southeast Ohio. And they did. They got the permit, and immediately the environmental groups, particularly the enclave of Woodstock hippies in the area, began to protest and object to it. It's located about 20 miles to the east of me, within a mile of the Ohio River, and I drive past it to and from work every day. At midnight, I see all kinds of tanker trucks, and I say all kinds, maybe 3 to 6 tanker trucks that are labeled brine on the side of them,
mm-hmm.
coming through, traveling the same highway that I do, and they turn off at the same road right to that injection well, right around midnight, every night, except it's slowed down recently. As it turns out, they couldn't get an injection well for love or money in Pennsylvania, because they are controlled in the state of Pennsylvania by the EPA, and they will not permit them there, hands down. So they looked in Maryland, they looked in Ohio, they looked in Pennsylvania, they looked every state around, and what they determined was Ohio had the lowest barrier, or the least encumbering restrictions to getting a injection well permitted. So they came to Ohio, they got the permit, and now they're trucking in the waste from the other states each evening to our injection well to put down our well into our underground water system, because we had no barriers to it. It's currently tied up in the courts with alternating court, you know, orders to suspend operations,
yeah.
and then being reversed by the state of Ohio saying, no, they're permitted, they're grandfathered in, and no, it's okay. So it goes back and forth and back and forth, and now it's just reared its head again, because even though they've been told to cease and desist, the operation apparently is continuing, and the question is, hey, who's supposed to be enforcing this? Guess what? Ohio didn't put any enforcement in their regulation that they passed. So, you know, it's really a headache for the local community here, that other people around the country have dealt with some of these issues, but they're not hearing about this one because so few people live in this corner of the state. So,
and that's
I'll get off my soapbox.
Is that like Wayne National Forest area? Is that
very close to that area, but not in the Wayne National Forest?
Yeah,
they bought commercially available property at a particular intersection right across the street from a rest area, and it's within the watershed of the Hocking River, and it's within the which immediately dumps into the Ohio River, which coincidentally is at flood stage right now because of the torrential downpour of this last winter storm that came through.
Are there many? Are there many people in that area that use well water?
All of them.
See, one of the things that happened here, not within the cities and stuff, not in like areas where I am, but in outlying areas where the people use well water, the water was catching fire.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you could actually light it coming out of your faucet on fire. That's just craziness. Yeah, now,
it's not good.
Yeah, now here in my area, I could go outside, in my other house, I could go outside and look about 5 miles any direction, and I could see the fracking units that they had there. They were in the neighborhoods, you know. They were just, you know, they had these sound barriers and everything put up, and it was a pretty slick operation the way they had it going, because one day they weren't there, next day they were, and they went by stealth. And then all of a sudden things got on the news, but yep. It didn't go away until administrations changed. And then, you know, that's when it got knocked down due to certain laws at the national level. But
yeah, they are very stealthy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that you've got the right word. They are very quiet and operate under the radar, if at all possible.
But because of that, you know, at that point in time, you know, we were looking at gas that was about anywhere from $1.80 to $2.50 a gallon average. And that was because we were, at that point, the United States was the highest producer of oil in the world. And of course, since a lot of this has been shut down, we're no longer on that level. And right now, our gas in Texas is at like about $3.50 a gallon. And it's going to be blamed on the administration. It's always going to get blamed on the administration.
Especially in an election year.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely, but that is a pretty ridiculous price for gas, I would say. John, did you have anything else you wanted to add on that subject? Because I really got another subject that I want to bring up.
Nope, I have nothing else to add.
The reason why I wanted us to have this this thing is because I've been seeing a lot of memes, and I've been seeing these kind of memes for years about kids that, you know, people that grew up as kids in the 70s. And, you know, John and I are pretty much in that smack dab in that group. And Kirk, I know you're a little older than that.
I still say I was a kid in high school the first half of the 70s. What's your point?
Well, you know, I keep seeing these things, how they talk about things were so much better back then. And, you know, how life was great. We went outside. We spent out all our days outside. And, you know, the alarm for us to go home was the sun going down or the streetlights coming on, you know.
Exactly.
There was no internet. There was, you know, it's like just, you know, 3-4 channels TV, all this stuff. And it was so great. And also I see, you know, in a lot of the Facebook groups, people talking about that age of comics, you know, that age of the 70s and 80s, how that was just like the you know, our golden years of comics, because the material that was coming out again was so great. You know, of course, we had all those greats. We had Neil Adams, George Perez, John Byrne, Mike Grell, you know, Jerry Bingham. You know, the list goes on. There were just all these, you know, greats that were, you know, putting out great artwork. Walt Simonson, Frank Miller, you know, not just the writers, but the writer artist, you know, the era when that really became a thing, the writer artist and all that. And we look back on that with such with misty eyes, you know, how we loved all that. And it was just awesome, you know. And, you know, I look back on that and I look back with love, because, you know, my history in comics was I started reading about 1970. And the point at which I kind of turned my back on comics for a little bit, it wasn't that point where, like, a lot of us got where they're just like, it's time to turn my back on childish things or to put away childish things. It was, I got, you know, kind of dispirited with the whole death of Superman thing, because I just felt I was too cynical about it. I felt it was just a cash grab.
It was.
Well, of course it was. But the thing is that the guys that were doing it, and I look at, you know, Dan Jurgens and Roger Stern, and, you know, and the guys in there, you know, the Mike Carlin is, you know, is an editor, and I know that they actually felt strongly about it, and they've been wanting to do it, you know. Still, it's not my favorite, you know, run in comics at all. I've gone back and I read it all, and I'm just kind of like, yeah, okay. For me, I like my Superman to be so strong that he doesn't actually punch himself out to death. You know, die because he punched so much. Because it was his last punch that you know, took out Doomsday, but also killed him. Not that Doomsday had you know, pierced his heart or anything like in the movies. But again, what got me to walk away from comics wasn't reading it. It was just hearing about it and seeing that it was being put into motion. And I'm just kind of like, yeah, I'm done. And, you know, I mean, that was in 92. And I know that something in the mid to late 90s, I got married and my first wife had no knowledge or interest in comics at all.
Well, that's a strike against her right there.
Well, the thing is that, you know, once, you know, we got together and she started looking at my books and she said, you know, I'd like to read some. And so I took her to the comic book shop and I showed her different things, tried to see what was going to be in her interest. And what she liked was things like that Young Justice that Peter David put out back in that era, and she was reading some of that. And it was then that I started seeing some of the things that Byrne was doing. And I think that was the time when they started doing the team-ups with Marvels, that he had done the Batman, Captain America, Galactus, Darkseid. I found it very... I was intrigued by that, but it was more a sense of nostalgia, and that got me into that. So I was very selective about which books I picked up. Hey, David Thompson is trying to join. I think he can hear us, but he can't talk. Oh no, there surprise. He is! Surprise! Wow!
Surprise! Surprise!
Welcome back. How you doing?
Good. Good. Been busy.
I'd like to catch up and see what's going on, but I want to finish this thought here. And basically, I'm talking about the era of comics that you love. But the thing is that from that point on, when I was buying books, it was a nostalgia thing. It was, I wanted something that was like it was before, and so I centered around Byrne. I did pick up the new Avengers run where George Perez was working with Kurt Busiek, because I found Kurt Busiek was a writer that wrote like they used to write in the previous era. And so I picked up, you know, like Marvels. I picked up Kingdom Come, but I didn't like that as much as I liked Marvels. But my point to this is that you always look back at the things of your youth with that kind of...
Affection.
And it's like all these memes that the people are putting out about the 70s and such and how great it was and all that. And I have to like hold back the urge to sit there and type in each one of those where they talk about how great it was during the 70s when everybody was just riding their bikes and all that. And I said, guys, 90% of my time in the 70s was sheer boredom. Trying to figure out what to do. You're riding your bike to go here to do something. Oh no, nothing's going on there. Ride your bike over there. Or you're just sitting around with your friends on the street corner. What do you want to do? I don't know. It's hot. And then the only other thing that we had to do was to go to the swimming pool. And the swimming pools are so, so crowded that it was hard to go out there and have fun doing that. And if you didn't have any money, it was even worse. And as, you know, kids, preteens in the 70s.
How much did it cost to go to the swimming pool in your community?
Well, it's funny. We weren't Jewish, but we were members of the Jewish Community Center.
Okay.
And so it was a whole family membership, so I could go there every day.
Okay.
And so I didn't have to pay anything to get in there. It was just, you know, could I afford, you know, snacks, drinks, stuff like that. And I didn't have a ride, so I'd have to either take my bike or walk down there.
Right.
You know? And right. It was about a 10-minute bike ride from the house. And again, you know, I always enjoy swimming and everything. But, you know, in the summer during the days, they cut off part of the swimming pool, which is about half the size of an Olympic pool. And they cut off half of it for lessons. And there was like a scout kind of thing that was always going on. And so you only had a certain part of the pool that everybody would use. And then you had all the sun worshipers on all the open area trying to, you know, with their copper tone on, trying to get a tan.
Right.
And so
and getting cancer.
Yeah. So, you know, it's like you and your friends were just trying to find, you know, a patch of water that you could go into to swim. or you're trying to find a patch of shade so that you weren't getting baked.
Right.
Now, that's looking at it through the negative lens. It really is. I mean, the thing is, it was half fun, half boredom. But I don't think people remember the boredom. I do. I can't help but remember it.
Well, that time period is basically between that part of child development, between being directed by your mother and your parents and being self-directed to find interests of your own, mm-hmm. and having the mobility, whether it's walking or riding your bike, to be able to pursue them.
In an analytical method, you
have your own transportation, and you're starting to develop your ability to self-direct and pursue your interests, and there's nobody to tell you, stop, you shouldn't do that, you shouldn't buy that comic book, or don't listen to that music. You're able to pursue without any restraints, and that makes it a very fond time period of your memory.
Go ahead.
My experience, we had a swimming pool, a municipal swimming pool in my town that unfortunately was basically a small rural town, about a mile to 2 miles square. We were in the northeast corner, and the swimming pool was on the extreme southwest edge. And so it was too far to bicycle across the town. But on the other hand, if your parents would take you there and drop you off in the family station wagon, you only needed a dime for admission. So every kid had a dime to get in, and one of the kids had a dime to make the phone call at the end of the year or end of the day in the payphone to say, okay, Mom, we're done, come pick us up. And that was it. There was no food, there were no snacks, there was nothing else. You just needed one thin dime.
It's been municipal pool talk.
Yeah.
On NPR.
I got a question about burn.
Okay.
Looking on the Third Degree Burn Facebook page, there have been a couple of posts recently taken from Critical Error of the spacefaring space jockey, whatever his name is.
Yeah.
The burn substitute and the naked woman. Whatever her name is, we never get it because it's a silent story.
Right.
And the question came up, does Byrne work from life models, nude models, or did he draw completely out of his imagination? Does anybody know the answer?
He's got certain people that he uses, that he likes to use as a model for this or that. Like, he's got a specific Playboy Playmate that was his model for Scarlet Witch. You know, and so, you know, he's got a male model character or several male model characters based on the body type and all that. As far as faces go, I don't know.
I meant the full figured woman. The thought just occurred. Does he have a new life model for that particular work? Because I know he's patterned, you know, the Hellfire Club after notable actors, every single one of them.
Yeah.
I know that. But I was just wondering, in general, if he used life model drawing.
I've never heard of him using someone to specifically be the physical, you know, stand up there kind of model. I think he's always gone off of some sort of, I don't want to say photo referencing, because he's got his own poses, you know?
Right, right.
But, you know, it's more of a likeness kind of thing where he's like, yeah, she looks like this. And he then creates the model that he draws and then does all the poses based on that.
Because there's a lot of human form books, too.
That, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Know, if he had an idea of, okay, I want the character, but what would that look like? You know, the body.
Well, even Kirby is known to have taken a couple of Sue Storm poses from the early FF right out of Playboy, or I don't know which other ones, but they've been documented. There's at least two that I'm aware of that always, she seemed to be standing rather oddly. And then later on, as an adult, when somebody goes, oh, that's from this Playboy, it was like,
yeah,
bingo, that's where it was. You know, that's exactly what it was. Not that he used exclusively that, but people have found a couple of them, and that's an amazing job of research, as far as I'm concerned. That's amazing that they were able to make that link.
Well, I mean, you know, these guys, Byrne and Kirby, both had careers that lasted 40, 50 years.
Well, they must have had huge reference files.
You know, but at the same time, they are going to recycle some poses, some moves, mm-hmm. and such. You know, you just can't expect them to have everything be fresh and clear from beginning to end. Now, I hate when people sit there and say, "Oh, that's a swipe" or whatever. You know, because there's too much argument about if something's a swipe or an homage. But you know, I don't want to go into that very much. What do you think, John? You've been kind of quiet. Looks like you're muted too.
I was. You guys were just going on and on. You know, like David said, there's a lot of form books. I mean, I remember when I was trying to study drawing. I mean, I had books that had different poses of heads and faces and body types and hands, and so, you know, he may be using models, or I mean, hey, Playboy is a great way to find out a female form and Playgirl for a male form. So, you know, it's possible that he did and use those. So, I don't know. I mean,
you know,
I never thought about it. When it came to, you know, what kind of a model did he use for this? I mean, that's the stuff that I never thought about, and I still don't think about now. So I just enjoy if the story looks good and the art looks good. That's good for me.
I'm with you. I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Well, cool. Hold on. So, David, I got to ask you. I don't know if you were part of the conversation earlier. Have you been having weird dreams lately?
Have I been having weird dreams?
Yeah, vivid dreams. Just something that's like within the last, you know, few days. It's just like, wow, that you actually remember once you wake up.
Oddly enough, yes.
Holy cow, this is creepy. I mean, it seems to be like nationwide. Okay, it's happening all over. And
you want to share it?
I recalled them after I woke up for a while, but I don't know if I could recall them now.
Okay.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if there's something to do with, you know, the eclipse.
Yeah.
And
that's what we're saying. That's what we're saying.
Different. Well, there was a program years ago I remember watching that was trying to understand why people all have this same kind of alien abduction scenario.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they were able to mimic an alien abduction in a sleeping person's brain via magnetism, you know, by bombarding them with different frequencies.
Hmm.
So it wouldn't surprise me that there's something, you know, with the eclipse, and maybe there's some kind of, you know, extrasolar radiation coming down, and it affects us in ways we just don't really understand yet.
Well, also we're going through a little bit of magnetic flux on our planet. Yep. As the poles are getting ready, now it could happen, now it could happen in 100 years, but the poles are getting ready to shift. So our North Pole will now be at the South, and yeah, vice versa. So
I'll have to try and find that documentary, but yeah, that's, they were able to get people to have alien abduction nightmares.
Wow.
Well, it's also true, you know, if you're all watching the same national television program,
yes,
and seeing the same, you know, whether it's a national broadcast of The Wizard of Oz, for instance, or something else, and everybody's watching it, and then after the fact, you relax, and then your subconscious is flipping through that. It's not unusual for brothers and sisters to call each other after the fact, after the movie's over, and say, "Hey, do you remember when we used to play in the backyard?" And, you know, and they'll both be thinking the same thing because it triggers the same memories in them. You follow what I'm saying?
Seeds are
planted. So if you see a headline in the newspaper that happens to mean something to you and your family, it's not unusual to have family members reconnect and not know why they're both thinking about something. at that period. So it's not that unusual of a topic. It's just disturbing or a little unsettling when it happens. So
I just thought it was because I went to the movies last
night. Back when we had only three or four TV channels. You know, when everybody was watching I Love Lucy, or everybody was watching All in the Family, you know, when there were only two or three or four national outlets for television and movies, that people were much more commonly all linked. Now that we have cable and we have streaming and, you know, we're all over the board, that doesn't hold together as well. But
no, and that goes back to the nostalgia thing, right, about the 70s, right? So I was a kid of the 80s. Not too much different from what your experience was like, Brian. Once, you know, I was old enough, I was always riding my bike to my friend's house, you know, for trying to find something to do because, of, you know, Nintendo didn't come out until the latter part of the 80s. And then that was regulated by my parents, right? You're not going to sit in front of the TV all day and play Nintendo.
Yeah, you're going to burn your eyes out.
Yeah.
Yep, yep.
Yeah.
Save them for the eclipse.
Yeah, that's right.
That's right. Well, I mean, Trump looked right at it and he was fine.
Oh, man.
So, yeah, the 80s were very similar. You know, what helped our boredom was, you know, video games came into the picture.
Yeah.
But, you know, growing up in the Midwest, you know, there's 6 months out of the year where it's, you know, really cold to go outside. So that was nice. But yeah, to your point, there was more. The one thing I will say is that there was more kind of structure around the days and the weekends based on, you know, television and then school and, you know, the family time. You know, I kind of miss that my kids aren't experiencing the same, you know, excitement of coming home, getting their snack, and running downstairs to watch, you know, the afternoon cartoons. Because they don't do that anymore.
Right. Well, I mean, you know, they've always got something to keep them engaged.
They get their half an hour of iPad. You know, and my wife gets upset, you know, about, they're on the iPad too much. I said, you know what? But they hardly watch any TV. We watch one program together at night as a family. So their TV is basically the iPad. So it's the same as when we would come home and race to get our snack and run downstairs and watch, you know, an hour of cartoons and relax from school and then, you know, start your homework. It's the same for them. But there's not that, oh crap, you missed the show, right? And that's what I was alluding to, the, you know, racing down, because it's like, oh, you know, the show starts at, you know, 2:30. If I don't get there, you know, I'm gonna miss it.
Yeah, there is no more of that. That's that's just so bizarre. My own son is a lot different in this regard, because when he was growing up, we kind of limited his access to media until, you know, we were ready for him to understand it. So he didn't suffer the. I mean, we always found ways to keep him engaged, though. We gave him stuff to read and, you know, other things to do, and he liked to draw. My older boy, Michael D., my stepson, now he was one of those where boredom was pain to him. Mm-hmm. And he had to have something to engage him or he would act out. And so, he just needed something. It's like if we were going on a car trip somewhere, we had books on CD, like the Harry Potter books. And he goes, please turn it on. Please turn it on. He the moment that we got in the car, he was just like, please turn it on. I got to listen to it, you know. Or if because this is before smartphones was really a big thing. So we and then we got, you know, DVD players for the cars, because we did a lot of driving, a lot of road trips and stuff. And if we didn't have something like that, and then when the PlayStation Portable came out, I had one of those, and then we got him a DS. But yeah, he just wanted to be, he had to have something to keep him occupied, or he was just in some kind of hell.
Yeah, I understand. Langley's our busybody.
Yeah.
So she, you know, is either if her iPad time is up, then she's crafting, or she's drawing, or she's painting, or she's gotten into crocheting now, and if she's not doing that, then she's reading. Like, in her mind, she's going from A to B to C to D to, you know what I mean? Like, there's...
Yeah.
On to the next thing.
Something to keep her occupied.
Yeah, and Declan is much more easygoing, so he just kind of floats along and does, you know, some things for a while, but he'll stay focused on something for a long time, you know, like you give him a huge thing of Legos, which we have a Lego table in the basement with bins of Legos, and he'll just disappear for a half hour building stuff, and then he'll pop his head back up, you know, look what I made.
Now, Kirk, your daughter was born in the early 90s?
No.
84. Okay.
Sorry, 94.
Okay. So she's same age as Michael D. And I mean, it's again, you know, it would. Of course, you guys, you know, did your podcast and stuff, so you had very common interest, or it seemed you had common interests. But was she? How is she? In that era, because I mean, you know, a lot of kids were like, you know, they needed to have a Nintendo or something to keep them occupied. Was she more studious or?
That's hard for me to say because working nights, I wasn't engaged with the kids a lot. I was just a guy who showed up on the weekends, so we're not as close as some families. I recall that my wife really engaged her in creative things like drawing or costuming or, you know, that sort of artistic stuff. And she had a bend for that and still pursues that now. By the way, both of our kids still live at home since the pandemic here. So, you know, they're adults now and not kids in this household. So they have their own car. They have their own interests and work schedules. And so it's different now. But in terms of computers, my son got into computers at a young age and played video games, generally either in the Child Development Center, read the local university's Kitty Daycare Center, and is still very much addicted to computers and will stay up all night playing, I don't know what the name of the current fad or the current game is, but he's very much involved in that. So I'm not sure that I can answer you. You know, they both were in some form of a daycare or childcare, and they both had an orientation towards creativity. But he just really took to computers and had a Game Boy. I don't believe she had one until he had one. And I, you know, we never went down the road of video games as in my wife and I. We had an Intellivision and would play one or two cartridge games back when we were dating. But that was about it.
Intellivision, you were the rich kids.
Because they marketed it, that it had a keyboard, and therefore it was going to be the first early version of a PC, of a personal computer, and damn if the keyboards never showed up in the Detroit suburbs.
I don't think they showed up anywhere. I don't know that they really showed up anywhere. I don't think they ever mass-produced enough for them. Because I had a girlfriend, they had Intellivision, they never got the keyboard. So, I mean, it was just, you know, a selling point that didn't come through.
Right.
Dang. So I was Atari guy all the way through. I'm seriously considering buying the Atari GameStation Pro. Have you guys seen this?
No.
It is, it's a console, and it sells for about anywhere between $70 to $100. And it has virtually every one of the 2600 games, every one of the other games that went with the 8-bit and 16-bit systems that Atari put out in the 80s. And again, it's only the Atari ones. I don't think they have the Activision stuff in there, so no Pitfall Harry. But it's got just hundreds upon hundreds of games in there. And it's, again, it's you know, not that expensive, but I'm just sitting there going, yeah, but would I really play that much? I keep going back and
probably
forth
not,
whether or not I should pull the trigger.
Probably not, because they've been doing this for the last, I don't know, 5-6 years, coming out with these mini consoles.
Yeah.
So it started with the original Nintendo,
yeah,
and then it was preloaded with, I don't remember, 40 or 50 games or something like that. Then they did a Super Nintendo, and then Sega Genesis, they did two of them. I have both of them, mainly because when I was growing up, we were a Nintendo house. So we went from regular Nintendo to a Super Nintendo. But my friend had a Sega Genesis, and I always thought the Sega Genesis was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
But going back and playing it now on the mini console, so many of those games are just bad.
Yeah.
You know, they're just very repetitive or just cheap, you know, in the way that you die. And
yeah, but that was all you had back then.
Yes, yeah. Back then, I wouldn't complain.
Yeah.
Because you just spend an hour, you know, repeat, rinse and repeat until you got it right.
And this is what takes me into the whole nostalgia thing. And I'm going to circle back on the comics of the era that we grew up. Now, I don't know Kirk's experience, but I'm betting John's experience, my experience, and maybe your experience too, David, was going to be similar in the fact that, you know, getting comics as a kid was not an easy thing, you know, especially in the 70s and the early 80s, because, you know, you went to the convenience store, which was down the street. For me, it was a little place called U-Totem, and they got new books every Wednesday, but it wasn't like a huge selection, you know. Mm-hmm. Maybe 5-6 different comics would come in, and, you know, I didn't want to read Wonder Woman. You know, I'd Spider-Man, Superman, Batman, and then later on, you know, Justice League. But it took me a couple of years to find out about the X-Men. But the thing was, you know, and the Flash. And I would buy these books, but I would, you know, I had this collection, you know, 30 books maybe at one point, where I'm just sitting there reading these books over and over and over. And I know those books all so well.
Yes.
And then as you get older, you get a little bit more in your collection, but you just keep reading them all over and over. And if there's something that's got an incredible storyline, you read that over and over and over. And we do this in our youth. And then once you get to that point, say when you find your first comic book shop, and then you have a wide vista, a wide range of books and back issues and stuff available for you to get, you find yourself rereading books a lot less. And so therefore, they don't have that same nostalgia feel that those books had. I mean, every now and then you can find a story that reminds you of that kind of thing and it gives you the feels. But really, you look back on those older ones like they were the greatest books ever. But just because you know them so well.
Give you a good example of that. J. David Weider did a Daredevil podcast that is podfaded now.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to think what it was called, but it slips my mind. And he describes specifically the issue of the Fantastic Four, number 38, and a blind man shall lead them, where Daredevil is guiding the powerless Fantastic Four as Dr. Doom strikes. Man, he was describing that book on his one-man podcast, and I'm driving down the street, and I'm envisioning each panel as he's describing what's going on, and I can see it in my mind's eye because that was one of the original 20 or so Fantastic Four books that I had purchased, used as a collection, and I had read them and reread that and reread them, and that's imprinted on my mind's eye. That was the most bizarre experience, to be able to see it in my mind's eye as I was driving, commuting, as I was listening to that podcast. Boy, I wish I could remember what the name of that podcast was.
Dave's Daredevil Podcast, I think.
I think you're right.
Take the dare. I have no self-control.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, that promo is burned into my brain.
Yeah.
Thanks, Dave. I hope he's listening. Is anybody listening?
Sure.
No, we got a few listeners. They just don't write to us.
No, they get on our Facebook page, though.
That
oh, speaking
true.
Of which, we have a new, I don't know if he's a new member or new contributor. I didn't recognize the name. Osarin Marshall?
Yeah, he actually is on several of the Burn forums. in Facebook, and he's constantly putting stuff up. You'll see him dropping stuff. I do wonder if we should keep some of them up, because like he had that one image from Critical Error that was the full nude woman there, and I'm just like, should we keep that on there?
Yeah, I think we're fine.
Yeah, no one's raised any complaint.
It's not like he's exploiting it, but I, you know,
doesn't show.
I think
anything.
We're okay.
Yeah,
if it made it past the comic code, we're fine.
It didn't.
Right.
Oh. They did reprint it later, and they blocked out all the naughty bits.
Yep. or at least drew another line that implied that she had.
And this had, is the funny thing, because his image in there was a color image, but if I remember right, this when it was originally printed with the nude was in the art
That's
of John
right.
Byrne, and that was black and white. The color,
That's right.
It was blocked out. So this must be someone else colored it.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right.
And,
I caught that too.
Yeah. Now looking at that image, the coloring itself is kind of they had a limited palette when they did it. So, yeah. But yeah, Asarn does put a lot of stuff out. You know, just things that I think he's finding stuff on the John Byrne Art Gallery that you know people don't see every day. There's a website out there, it's artofjohnbyrne.ourbunch.net, and it's got basically the entire John Byrne Art Gallery that used to be on his own website, and this has got some really cool stuff, some rarities and things that you've never seen. It's also got a lot of pictures of Byrne himself in his studio, and other personal pictures of Byrne and fans that have come out to buy, you know, to pay for their commissions, and they pick them up personally. That was back when he did commissions, which he doesn't do anymore.
Hey, Brian, are you hitting something on your keyboard?
I thought he was sweeping crumbs off his desk or something.
No, I've got a limited area because I got multiple keyboards and multiple input devices. I've got limited area, so I'm moving my mouse around, and I have to move it, you know, a few inches over to be able to keep swiping over to.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like.
And that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, we're picking that up.
I should get a mouse pad, but I'll get a mouse pad. Not right
it's
now.
It's distracting, Brian, is what we're trying to say.
Speaking of contributions to the Facebook page, I had never heard the. I shared one recently that I found on another site. It's the splash at the end of the X-Men story where Sauron in the Savage Land has grabbed hold of Oro, right?
Yeah.
And apparently somebody, maybe it's just what this fan had called it, but apparently they referred to it as the Storm thigh picture. I've never heard it expressed that way, so I've been staring at it and sharing it and looking at it, and it's like, the more I look at it, it's like, yeah, you know what? Her hip isn't well placed, or let me rephrase that. Her hip is very well placed, but it is disjointed or something. I mean, it's got to be hip dysplasia.
I'm sorry.
If that was a real person.
You're looking at hips? What?
Yeah, this is...
That's not what I'm seeing when I look at this image.
Kirk is a lonely man, Brian.
No, but when I look at this image, my eyes definitely go somewhere else.
Your eye is drawn to Sauron and his eyes.
No. No. I'm not looking at a pair of eyes. I'm looking at a pair of something else. Okay?
Okay. Okay. Well, I was looking at her boots, and I was a bit surprised to see that her boot and her foot is really misshapen.
What boot?
Really
what foot?
Distorted. And then I started looking at it and realized that's Cyclops' glove. That's not her. Anyway, I didn't sit and stare at this thing until somebody else had posted it. Because I read the story. It had already come out. I was getting the back issues. And it was a great cliffhanger. And so I just went right on past it. I was never fixated by it. But somebody posted this and gave it a name. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that was a thing. Has anybody else heard this name before? Or had it referred to that way?
My picture? No. I've heard people mention it. And I'm just like, okay. To me, it's funny because when I look at this image, You know, it's Byrne, you know, in that prime era with Terry Austin doing the inks. But you can look at that now and say, you know, this looks like what Todd McFarlane would draw on a regular basis, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm just like, okay, all right. But, you know, I'm not going to be critical of it because it just, it's never bothered me in that way because, you know, I didn't look at it long enough. You look at anything long enough and the shape doesn't make sense. You look at your own face, your nose in the mirror. After a while, it loses its, you know, part of your body and it's an individual thing. And all of a sudden it looks weird. This is why people get upset about their own appearance.
That's true. They said that about Michael Jackson, too.
Yeah.
That the reason why he underwent cosmetic surgery is because as he got older and was looking in the mirror, he was seeing his father's face emerging and that he desperately wanted to distance from that.
Well, when he was looking like Diana Ross, he was fine. But he kept going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At least that's what I heard. So, you know, that makes a lot of sense, I think.
In terms of
trying to figure out his motivation.
But yeah, I had read that too, and you know, his father was terribly abusive to all the kids, but especially Michael. So I can imagine you know, seeing your abusive father's face emerging in the mirror and staring back at you every day would be horrendous. But it's like you're saying, Brian, once you start, you can't stop. You know, that's the trap that a lot of these celebrities fall into and, you know, people with a lot of money. It's, well, you know, I want to fix, you know, we used to call it turkey neck, right? I want to fix that because, you know, we're all, our society as a whole is becoming a little more vain. But, you know, so you go and you get your neck fixed and then it's like, well, but I don't like these bags under my eyes. You get that fixed, you know, and it just goes on and on.
Right.
My wife and I were talking about that, about how we all had grandmas growing up that looked like grandmas.
Right.
You know, like everybody's grandma looked the same. You know, they were all old, white hair. You know, they're either skinny because they always been skinny or they were big because they just, you know, were the grandma body. You don't see that now.
Yeah, it's weird because, you know, like the other day, we had to go to my son's high school for a play that he was stage manager for. And you couldn't tell the difference between the students and the parents. The high school girls look like they're 35 and divorced. And the mothers look like they're still trying to be in high school. It's crazy. Ugh. Me, I just wear a baseball cap all the time so you can't see my bald head. Kirk, your video's on, but you're in the dark. You look like one of those guys that hides in his basement with a tinfoil hat on his head.
It's like a prepper.
Yeah, yeah, you're in a prepper basement.
Well, I just thought I'd share my silver hair there for a moment.
Ah.
It was hideous, Kirk. How
yes, I know. He was describing the older senior citizen. Yeah. Suddenly I am one.
Well,
anyway, anything else we need to cover today? We've been talking for 90 minutes.
Yeah, I figure we've pretty much covered the ground. Just want everybody to be careful with the solar eclipse, not just, you know, not looking directly at the sun, but just, you know, be cognizant of everybody around you. I think there's going to be people on the roads when it's happening, and they're just going to be, I don't know, distracted. So please, please be careful with that. I'm going to try and post this tonight so our listeners will have something to listen to while they're stuck on the road.
Good.
John, do you have any last thoughts you want to share with everyone?
Well, just about the thing with the 70s is, you know, there's good things and other things that, you know, we miss or that, like you said, were boring. And the same today. So nostalgia is just like appreciation of your era of comics. You know, it's when you grow up. It's what you're used to. And yeah, and I love rereading my stuff. I'm so glad we got collections now, collected editions, because that makes it so easy to read all the stories that I used to love reading. And And now, of course, if you want a modern comic, you just wait for a couple months and it'll be out collected anyway, too. So you can do that over and over again.
Yep, yep.
So, yeah, yeah, no, that's good.
Wanted to tell everybody, I went last night and saw the new Godzilla Kong New Empire movie.
Oh, that's right, you did. How'd you like it?
I thought it was the best one Legendary's put out. I really thought it was a great, great movie. You know, it while it did still have the conspiracy guy in there, he wasn't as playing to the kids as much as he was in the last one, if you know what I mean. It was more of a serious storyline for him, and still enjoyable. He was still funny. The overall story was really, really good. The usage of Kong, and I mean, because it was Kong's movie, really. I mean, as much as it's, you know, called a Godzilla movie, it was Kong's movie. And I like that because Kong is my favorite of the kaiju. You know, not that you can really call him a kaiju. He's just the first. He's the first, you know. But yeah, a really good movie, really good story. Lots of great fights. The special effects, once again, are really, really done really well. The evolution of Godzilla's body in this, it was logical, made sense. What they did there was pretty good. Fun movie. And they brought in a couple things I didn't expect, other kaiju I did not expect. So, I didn't look at all the stuff as the movie was being made to see what was going on in it. So I didn't know exactly what we were going to be up against. I knew that they were going to have the other giant ape in you know, the Hollow Earth, and I knew they were going to have a baby ape there too. And I didn't know if that was going to be like Son of Kong or what. But no, the what they brought in really surprised me. Again, once again, it was really, really good. I'll just say, again, my favorite one out of what they've done. That could change in 6 months after I've had time to think about it, but that's where I stand right now. Anybody else got anything?
Yes. My wife and I, not this weekend, but last weekend, went to see the new Ghostbusters movie, Frozen Empire.
And?
Anybody else see it?
Not yet.
Okay, I won't spoil it. This will be spoiler-free, but it's generally good, but I urge you, if you have not already seen the earlier movie, Ghostbusters Afterlife,
yeah,
you really ought to watch that one first, because there are so many additional characters now in the grouping, in the pantheon, so to speak, that in order to catch the relationships, this movie will touch on it, and one person will say, well, I'm your stepdad. And that's inserted only to bring people up to speed as to what their relationships are. See the first movie. It'll be a whole lot easier to have the second movie make sense. Not that it won't, but this is like the middle act of a three-part play. And so, you really need to see that Afterlife, which is a good movie on its own, by the way. They hit the right notes. There were several in-jokes that nudge, nudge, wink, wink, if you've seen the earlier movies where they are playing on something that happened in the very original movie. Danny Aykroyd as the producer, he knows the right notes to hit, and it works. You keep waiting for the big bad to show up. You keep waiting for the big bad to show up. You know that he's going to show up, and then finally he gets there, and I don't know if it was entirely satisfying, but it was a good two-hour romp. We had a good time. We enjoyed it. We talked a little bit about it on the way home in the car. And, I can't speak against the movie, but, boy, the older cast, you know, Danny Aykroyd, Bill Murray, Ernie Hudson, Annie Potts, they are getting long in the tooth, and they make no bones about that. They admit that in this movie. So I enjoyed it.
Has anyone seen Madam Web?
No.
Please don't be too negative about it. Just anyone see it yet?
No. I hear that it's dreadful.
Yeah, but you know what? That's just until you see it yourself. Just wondering, you know, has anyone planning to see it? Check for yourself.
No, I mean,
up on cable.
Yeah, when it's streaming or whatever, you know, we'll probably watch it. The thing that it does though is it scares me because you know how the movie studios are starting to remove movies already made, you know, to lock them away so that they can't be seen. You know, DC or Warner Brothers did with both the Batgirl movie and Acme. Was it Coyote versus Acme? And I'm afraid that Sony may do that with the Kraven the Hunter movie. Now,
yeah, where is that one?
Well, it's supposed to come out here pretty soon. Now, the thing is, Aaron Taylor Johnson, who plays Kraven, is the new James Bond. They made that announcement. So that may give them, you know, a reason to go ahead and put the movie out. You know, and not hold it back. But you know, so far, aside from their Venom movies, their other movies have not been very successful. And, I mean, I think the first Venom movie was successful. I don't know what the second one was.
Well, it was good enough for a third.
But the Morbius movie, of course, really tanked bad, and Madam Web really tanked pretty bad. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see. I hope that the Kraven the Hunter movie gets released because it really looks good. Whereas yes. I never had any faith in the Madam Web movie.
I never had any interest in the Morbius movie.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't like the character when he first appeared under, you know, in Spider-Man and under Gil Kane's artwork. I mean, it left me cold, so I scratched my head. Why in the world are they doing this?
Because they've got the rights to it, and they're trying to make some money off the rights. But I know we're wrapping up.
Yeah.
So I'll just throw my two cents in there. Discovery, the final season of Discovery, Star Trek Discovery, started Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
Saw the first episode.
Yep, and we just watched the second one last night. So they dropped two episodes. I'm curious to see how they're going to wrap this series up.
Did she cry?
No, she did not.
What? No. Oh, my gosh.
They fixed that by, like, season three, where she wasn't bawling her eyes out every episode. And then another good show, if you just want a fun...
But are you saying that Discovery looks good? The episodes you watched so far have been entertaining?
Yes.
Yeah. Looks like it has a really good story start, doesn't it, David?
It does, and there's a throwback to TNG and Picard. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, it's always had really top-notch special effects, you know, so everything looks really good. The other show that we're watching and really enjoying, you know, kind of coming back to that must-see TV, Tracker on Paramount Plus is really good.
Now, wait, is that the one with Justin Hartley?
Yes, my wife, okay. Before we started it, I showed her the preview, and she goes, "Oh, I know him. He's from This Is Us." And I never watched that show, but she was excited because she liked him as an actor.
Well, he was Green Arrow on Smallville, so you know he's got that cred to him.
So that's a good show. That's a episode of the week kind of thing. You know, he's literally a tracker. He finds, you know, he says he calls it lost things. It's generally a person, and it's just a fun show.
Have you all checked out Mr. and Mrs. Smith, the series?
No.
I've seen it, but I haven't sat down to watch it because I never saw the original movie.
You don't have to see it. It's completely separate, unrelated, in fact, from the movie, because in the movie, they didn't know who each other was, you know?
Right.
In this series, they're two people that are put together, and they're like, okay, your cover is your husband and wife. You do this job, he does this job. And then, you know, that's like your first mission will be coming up soon. And then they get the first mission, and it's you need to go and follow this person, get this thing, do this thing, and then go home. Don't let anybody see you doing these things, you know. And so, you know, it's Donald Glover, of course, is the guy character. I don't know the girl character, but I don't know the actress, but really, really good. Pulls you right in, and it's got kind of a original La Femme Nikita feel to it. I don't know if you guys ever saw that movie. In some ways, the way it's handled, the way that they're handled. So I really have enjoyed it. I've seen a couple episodes of that so far, and that's been pretty good. And to get me to sit down and watch a regular TV show is different these days. I don't sit there and watch a whole lot. I seek out my things. But Star Wars stuff I can pretty much just jump right into. But you know, the other stuff, it's got to be good. So I've been enjoying that. There's another show out there. I'm trying to remember the name of it because I kept thinking it was the Tracker show, but it's another one where it's like if someone's kidnapped or taken hostage, these are the guys that track it down. I cannot remember the name of it right now. And it's got Scott Kahn in it. So I'll look him up by that and see. And that one I'm watching with my wife, and that's rather enjoyable. It is called Alert, Missing Persons Unit. And so that's a pretty decent show. It's in the procedural area. But it's actually kind of fun. All right, well, I've got it. That's all I got.
Hey, Brian, yep. You shared Fanboy Radio with a John Byrne interview?
Yes.
I haven't listened to it yet. You must think a lot of that interview to share it. What do you think?
Well, again, I can't say that I think a lot of it. What I listened to at that point in time, I've got it on my thing so I can listen to it next time I'm driving. But what I thought of it was actually a pretty decent, you know, discussion. And he's in there. I mean, they're interviewing Byrne.
Okay.
And this is from about, looks like 2006, because he was working on Blood of the Demon and Doom Patrol at that time. And so they're asking a lot of questions about that. And I was actually just like, because I know he's supposed to cover other stuff, talk about other things. I was waiting to get to that. But I haven't been driving that much the last couple days. So I'm looking forward to on my way to work Tuesday, because I have to drive to the office now three times a week. To listening to the rest of it. But I've been listening to books, recorded books, audiobooks. Yeah. I've gone through the entire, well, I'm going through the Tom Clancy library. So I've listened to Patriot Games, Hunt for Red October, Cardinal the Kremlin, and now I'm on Red Storm Rising, which is not related to the Jack Ryan novels that all the other ones are, that I just mentioned are. A Red Storm Rising is basically just World War III from the 1980s perspective. And it's really good. It's a gripping story. So,
I recently watched the AMC series Monsieur Spade, which was moving the Sam Spade character into 1963 France, or maybe it's early 1960s. It was engaging, but when it all was said and done after the six episodes all aired, I could have lived without it. Very stylish, very enjoyable.
Slow moving.
But I'm not 100% convinced that it's the original Sam Spade character.
Yeah, and is that Clive Owen playing him?
Yes.
Yeah.
He does a wonderful job with the character that he portrays and the smart-ass comments. Wonderful job. But I had a hard time seeing Humphrey Bogart. That it was, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't Bogey that was playing it. I mean, who could do Bogey? So I have mixed feelings about it. If you're into it, you know, you'll find it intriguing, but I wouldn't stop the world to sit down and watch it. I don't think you could binge it all in one sitting. It's got to be spaced out because it's so dense.
If you like Clive Owen and like to see him in his enigmatic way, there's a movie called Croupier that came out in, I want to say, the mid-90s, mid to late 90s. And, it was 98, that's right. And he's very James Bondian in it, but he's just basically a dealer at a casino. As David is telling us, it is time to wrap it up, and I agree. We've been trying to wrap it up for about 20 minutes now. We really appreciate y'all listening to us. This is Coffee and Comics, so I'm not going to tell you how to write to us or whatever. You guys should know that by now. But we'll tell you on our next episode of Third Degree Burn. So we've got Kirk Greenfield, David Thompson, John Hyatt, and I'm Brian Hughes. Everybody say goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, and I want to get another round of this Topo Chico here with lemon juice, please. Anybody else need another drink?